Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. As always, I am your host, D-Baked, and as always, joining me is my co-host, Jim. How's it going, Jim?
It's going good, man. We're finally back, and shout out to that awesome intro, man. Fighters First, that's dope.
Exactly. As everybody knows, I am now aligned with FightersFirst.shop. We got a couple of podcasts on there. Me, we got Art of MMA, and now a good segue with that. We have merch now at Cage My IQ, so you can check it all out. Here's some of the stuff that we have with our merch. Right now, we have a couple of shirts in different styles, and then we also have a hoodie. So you definitely need to check out our merch. It's at www.fightersfirst.shop. Scroll down to the Cage My IQ collection, and then just check it out. Buy a couple for your family, and then just let us know what you think. We just got ours in. We should be wearing them next week to let you guys know how they are. But I know that from experience, they fit great. They're good for you. And if you like MMA, just get one of our shirts. But how are you feeling after that week off from UFC being out because of 4th of July?
Honestly, I felt like I was going through withdrawal, man. There was nothing. There were no combat sports on for a week. I didn't know what to do. I ended up watching golf and tennis, and I just got super tired. But I'm excited because not only do we take a week off, right, to celebrate our independence, but we get a trilogy fight with arguably the biggest name in combat sports history, yeah. Conor McGregor. This is a huge welcome back into the MMA world, but it's also a huge start to the summer. So I'm super excited for this one. And the main card is stacked. So good.
It is. And as always, everybody knows for the pay-per-view, there's usually only 5 fights on the card. Every fight on here is loaded, in my opinion. And yeah, as you just said, we got Conor McGregor headlining against Dustin Poirier for the 3rd fight of their trilogy. Likely will break records in the box office, mm-hmm, as always. And then they just announced that they're going to be showing this fight in AMC movie theaters around the world. So definitely look for at your AMC theater and see if that they're showing it. Because if they are, all you have to do is pay $30 to get in there. As I'm saying this, I'm like, damn, AMC should be sponsoring Cage My IQ right now. But I definitely am imploring you to definitely check that out and watch it in the movie theater, because you're only going to be paying a third of the cost to watch a trilogy fight that's going to be worth the watch. So definitely look into that. But to transition from that into what we're here for, we got 5-fight UFC 264 card, as you know, headlined by the trilogy fight between Poirier and McGregor. But let's get started with the action right now. Let's get started with our predictions right here. We got the first fight right here, which is a bantamweight matchup between Sugar Sean O'Malley, and he's going up against Chris Moutinho. First, you got Sean O'Malley. He's 13-1, and he's the -800 favorite. And then he's going up against Chris Moutinho, who is 9-4 and is the +550 underdog. What do you see in this matchup?
Well, first with this card, I was super excited when I saw it because I was familiar with all the fighters, right? And then Lewis Smolka drops out, he gets hurt, and then Chris steps in. And I wasn't very familiar with Chris, but I'd like to first start saying thank you to Chris for stepping in on short notice and also welcome into the UFC. This is his big break. Yeah. So shout out to Chris for getting here. With this fight, I see O'Malley underestimating a newcomer who took the fight on short notice. But Moutinho brings power and a good ground game to this fight. Chris can move the pace, but he does have, he is at a reach advantage of 2 inches, and he gives up 4 inches. O'Malley's a big bantamweight. He's 5'11". He moves quick. That weight gain after the post-weigh-in gain is going to be pretty big for him, but he moves well and likes to use his leg kicks to set up combinations. With O'Malley, I expect O'Malley to win this fight. And I think the path towards the victory is his use of those leg kicks, the use of the jab to set up combinations, to stun Chris, and then just really just go in. I think he knocks him down, hits him with ground and pound, and it's game over. So with that, I'm going to go with Sugar Sean O'Malley, TKO round 2.
Oh, I like that. I like that. It's almost close to what I have. But
nice.
With my breakdown, I got Sean O'Malley. He is a southpaw who loves to throw a lot of feints, and he has great striking IQ. He loves to use a vast range of kicks to attack his opponents, and he has really good footwork. That's what he's known for. He likes to go into the opposite stance of his opponent when fighting. He controls the range well and has great speed advantage, but needs to improve his durability. He has one punch knockout capability. Then you got Chris Motino. He's the newcomer. Of course, just like you said, he's a replacing Smolta. He is a southpaw who likes to walk you down when fighting. He has a brawler style mentality and tends to leave his chin in the air. Speed usually isn't on his side, but he allows too much damage on himself, and he tries to get his opponent to trade with him to get it into his game plan. He's very durable, though, and he likes to fight close up to try and get the advantage on his side. But in this matchup, we're going to go with the lines here. The line speaks for itself. I'm going with Sean O'Malley by first round knockout, possibly by leg kick. I'm a guy that likes the leg kick, like to a fault. But if you saw the matchups that he's had, even against Almeida, he used that leg kick and he was able to knock him down a couple of times with it. And that was a guy like Thomas Almeida, who is very well known for having that prodigy feeling up until he got into that 3-4 fight losing streak, with the last fight, of course, being against O'Malley. And I just feel like, plus with his height advantage, he's going to have a pretty decent height advantage. And he's just going to be able to move around. Right now, he is at the point that Conor McGregor was years ago at the start of his rise, with the karate stance, the moving around, keeping it at a distance. And it's kind of like a crazy parallel between the two of them. But I just see Sean O'Malley winning this, and that he's already been on the book in saying that when he wins, he has a guy in mind that he's going to call out after the fight. So he's definitely going to come in with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. With O'Malley, you know, I think the parallel with Conor is there, right? They're both super they have their personas. They're both good on the mic. They're both great fighters. They both move well, and they're both marketable, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that the UFC, and I've seen this online, and I was curious to see where you stick with this. Do you think the UFC is kind of treating Sean O'Malley the way that Bellator treated Michael Venom Page, and kind of baby gloved him a little bit, and not taking away anything from O'Malley? Like, he's a great fighter. We all saw what he did to Eddie Wineland. We saw what he did to Thomas Almeida, but they've been giving him like declining fighters or unranked fighters. His only true test was Cheeto.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I cold heartedly agree with you. I said this on one of the podcasts I was on the other day, that was my input, that I thought they were giving him the MVP treatment, where they're giving him guys that they know that he can win, and then they finally give him somebody, and then of course he had that dumb luck against Cheetah Vera. Great use of the check by Vera, but if he had have done that, I still think Sean O'Malley would have had a good fight against him.
Yeah, I agree.
And then he probably would have won, but he did that. It was the right move. He won. Sean O'Malley got hurt, and then he came back, and then, of course, he beat Almeida. But it's weird how they actually moved down. Like, he beat Almeida, and then he went down to fight guys instead of moving on up.
Yeah, like, fighters like Ciryl Gane, right?
Yeah.
Full head of steam. He's getting a title shot, right? Yeah. Couple wins in the UFC, beat ranked guys. Sean O'Malley came through contender series. He's has impressive wins, highlight fashion wins, right? And hasn't got a ranked fighter.
Yeah.
You know, not even top 15 fighters, right? He wants the way that stars have been built through the UFC in the past, like, if you put a 3-fight win streak together, 2-fight win streak, you have an impressive knockout, you're getting a ranked fighter so they can try to move you into the rankings. It hasn't happened there. So I'm really curious to see kind of what's going on, and I'm really curious to see who he calls out. Do you have any ideas? Or
I have no idea, because he called out Dominic Cruz last time, and that it didn't happen. So I'd be inclined to see who it does. It would likely be somebody in that 7-10 range.
I'm thinking Cody.
It could be Cody. That'd be an awesome fight.
Yeah.
But like before you transition to that, like I just was the thought process I had here is Chito Vera was right outside that top 10, or he was, I think he was at 10 or 11 when they fought. So I think him losing that kind of like made them like backtrack a little bit and be like, okay, he lost that. Maybe we need to give him a couple fights and then put him back into that spot. So maybe that's what their thought process was. And then just not that many people were available. So they had to do something like this. But we will see if he wins or not. He should win. But I think it would be kind of a – I don't want to say it would be a miracle, but it would be a miracle if he loses.
All right.
Yeah. But let's transition to the next fight on the card. This will be a women's bantamweight matchup, which is going to pit up Irene Aldana, who is 12-6 and is the minus 120 favorite. And she's going up against Yana Kanitskaya, who is 14-5 and is the plus 100 underdog. How do you feel about this matchup?
Yeah, lately Kunitskaya has been on a roll with two straight wins and is looking to move into the rank higher up into the rankings to get a shot at the champ. But she's facing Irene Aldana, like you said, who is looking to bounce back from her loss against Holly Holm. With this fight, I see Yana using her leg kicks to keep Aldana planted and trying to get the fight to the mat, like her last fight with Caitlin Vieira, where she kind of just laid on her for a very significant amount of time, just kind of peppering punches here and there to keep the fight on the ground. But she may have problems with Aldana, who has a 93% takedown defense. I see Aldana keeping the fight standing and looking to clip Yana as she tends to work the head more than anywhere else on the body. At some point, I do think that Aldana is going to take this to the ground, which is why I'm going to go with Irene Aldana by decision.
That's a pretty good one. I didn't think of that too much about her taking it to the ground, but this is my notes for this fight. First, I got Irene Aldana. She has a boxing background and she is great at fighting on the back foot. She likes to use a jab and throw a bunch of combinations. Her left hook is a power shot by far. She has really good takedown defense. She needs to improve getting back up from getting taken down, but like you said, she can take people down. She just doesn't do it as much, and she is too much of a one-dimensional fighter with her stand-up game. Then you got Yana Kanitskaya. Everybody knows her as being the fiance of Thiago Santos. She just started training at the same gym as him a couple fights ago, so you've noticed a little bit of a change with her since then. She has a Taekwondo background, and she likes to use kicks to keep the opponent at a good distance away. She tends to clinch up to her opponent when they finally do close the distance and the gap and get inside her. Her defense in the clinch is really well, and she is good at fighting off her back when taken down, but she needs to improve her takedown defense. She gets taken down way too much. I kind of feel like she gets comfortable and she just allows them to do it because she's okay with fighting off of her back.
Yeah.
And her hands are also need improvement. Like, she is known for have great striking, but I feel like ever since she got into the UFC, she's only won by decision. Yeah. Like right before she got into there, a lot of her fights were won by knockout or submission.
Yep.
But I think that the three or four fights that she's won since then, since joining the UFC, like I said, it's been by decision. She's gone to them. And of course, the last fight that she had, everybody knows, was kind of controversial with the decision because a lot of people feel like even though she outstruck Caitlin Vieira, I think it was like 120 to 30. She got taken down all three rounds and she was basically on her back for 80% of the fight. And then it gave like an uproar to people, even though I had Kanitskaya winning because of the striking, and then Vieira didn't do anything with the top position. She just laid on her.
Just laid there, peppered in punches. But that was such a frustrating fight because every time I pick against Kunitskaya, she wins. And I specifically, we went back and forth on that fight, I remember, with about how Caitlin Vieira's, you know, takedown defense is going to be superior and she's going to get her on the ground and, you know, work ground and pound. And she looked like she just kind of like lost momentum and didn't know where she was. And it was so weird. And, you know, the aggressive fighter gets it regardless of how many takedowns, it seems.
And that's where I'm leaning towards Irene Aldana with this fight, because she's more of an aggressive fighter. Both her and Giannis, the common opponent, was Caitlin Vieira.
Yeah.
And I believe Aldana knocked out Vieira in round one or two, I believe, in their fight. And that was her last fight before Holly Holm. And of course, Holly Holm is a different creature. You know, she's up there. And she didn't put a good performance in that one. But that doesn't, to me, knock her down too much. That just showed that she needs to improve on being more than one-dimensional. And in this matchup, I feel like that aggressiveness is going to be a great factor in this fight. And I actually have this as Irene Aldana by knockout.
Wow.
I got her knocking out Kunitskaya. I think Kunitskaya is going to try and stand up and trade. Because I feel like she's not going to have to worry about Aldana taking her down too much. So she's going to fall in love with striking a little bit this fight. And I feel like that's going to be a bad idea for her, because Aldana has that boxing background. And she has that vicious hook that she can throw that will just knock people out. And that's why I'm going Irene Aldana.
Yeah, she's got that mentality. Irene has this mentality to bite down on the mouthpiece and just keep throwing. And we've seen Kunitskaya have some issues. I mean, with one of her fights in Invicta with Tanya Evinger, she, you know, was getting pieced up. And I think that went to decision as well. But I think when it comes to this division, who has a better shot at the champ? And I don't know if either one of them, honestly, are going to dethrone the champ. But I think Aldana's takedown defense on top of her stand-up and her boxing background is a better offense than Kunitskaya's she's got an okay takedown defense, and like the Taekwondo background. I think Amanda pieces are up in that one too.
Yeah, I think in the long run, Kunitskaya is going to be good, because she's transitioning over into the ATT style, and I feel like it's going to take a few more fights for her to get more acclimated with all that. But in the long run, she's going to be better off, because she has more of the mixed in the and mixed martial arts than Aldana does. But Aldana just has that. She's very good at boxing, and she can knock somebody out. Whereas Kunitskaya, she'll match up greatly against more opponents than Aldana will. But she's just her striking is good. She's just not knocking people out at this level.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I don't know if it's just a step up in competition, or if she's getting gun shy and just is loving the grappling part of it. But there's just something there that's just off to me.
Yeah.
Even though she's winning, she's 3-1. Even though she's winning, it's just something's off where she's not dominating.
Yeah. And I think,
I
think it's because they paired her up with grapplers, honestly. Yeah. And then if you're paired up against someone like Caitlin Vieira, who's very good on her back and very good on the ground, like that's what you're going to work the most at.
Yeah.
Like you're going to have, especially if you have a suspect takedown defense. So she's going to work the ground game. She's going to work her BJJ. She's going to, you know, try to work in the clinch. Her stand up, you know, it's like riding a bike. She's just going to get back in there and do it. So she puts, she's putting most of her focus into the takedown defense. With this one, she's probably doing a lot of bag work, a lot of pad work, and just shooting for takedowns to kind of take Aldana off her game, just to the threat of the takedown.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. But let's move on to the third fight on this card. This one's actually a really interesting fight.
Yeah,
it is a heavyweight matchup. First, we got Tai Tuivasa, who's coming in at 12-3 and is the -135 favorite, going up against Greg Hardy, who is 7-3 and is the +115 underdog. How do you feel about this fight?
I feel that this is a good matchup between two heavyweights looking to take the next step in the division. Tuivasa has been a different fighter since his return to the promotion, has been more disciplined and calculated. He is moving well on his feet and using leg kicks to back his opponent to the cage to set up clinch work. With Hardy, he looked impressive against Volkov and incorporating more leg kicks and takedown attempts, but the experience in Volkov really got the better of him. He also moves well on his feet and has a tendency to fight a bully style to keep his opponent on his back foot to hunt the knockdown. With this fight, I think the more disciplined fighter is going to win, which is why I'm going with Tai Tuivasa by KO. And I can never pick Greg Hardy because he played for the Cowboys. I'll never pick him because he's he's a former Cowboy. That's the Eagles fan in me.
Yeah, and nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
I do like how he's progressed. Being in the UFC has actually gotten a little bit better.
Yeah.
But for my notes, first you got Ty Torrevasa. He likes to walk his opponents down, and he likes to get them pushed against the cage, where he throws a lot of hooks and power shots. He tends to mix up his hook and overhand strikes against taller opponents. He loves to throw the low calf kick now. He's added that since he was on the 3-fight losing streak. Yeah. He used to tend to rely on the power striking early on until then, and then he knew that he had to get better. So then he added that to his repertoire, and then a little bit of the wrestling. He turned that up a notch, and it's been a godsend in it for his fighting career.
Yeah.
And then he likes to clinch against the cage to keep his opponent in one spot. He does that a lot. His fight IQ has vastly improved, but he's weak on the ground against wrestlers and needs to show that he can improve against that in his fights. Then you got Greg Hardy. He's a quick and athletic guy. As you know, he played for the Carolina Panthers and the Dallas Cowboys, so he has that football background to help him out with that. He likes to throw straight right or a jab. That's what he leans on. He has worked on his defense since moving up in the rankings in the heavyweight division. He tends to leave his hands low in the fight, so he's usually susceptible to strikes. He leans back to defend himself too much, and he has a high pace but tires out quickly. Mm-hmm. And then he tends to not check leg kicks, but his movement is on his side in his fight. He knows how to move, yeah. And likely because of football. Like he just keeps on moving and keeps on going. But I feel like in this matchup, everybody knows it's going to come to a point where if he doesn't win this, what is the UFC going to do? Well, me and a lot of guys are talking about this. It's like every fight he's been featured on the main card, yeah. Literally every single time. He is 7-3, but it's like if he loses this one right now, are they going to cut him because they've been only focusing him on the main card and his name? Or would they actually be like, okay, we're going to have to move him down to the prelims now because he's not producing greatly like he is on the main card? I think that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Whether he loses or wins, if he wins, he'll be fine. They'll be like, okay, he won, we're gonna move on. But you got to keep a track on what happens if he loses. And I do think he's gonna lose by knockout, and I'm gonna say round two, because I think the first round, I think the big thing is he doesn't check the leg kicks. I feel like Ty Torrevasa is gonna throw a lot of low calf kicks in the first round. He's going to try and slow down the pace of Greg Hardy, and that's going to be a good way to do it in this fight, because he'll kick him a lot. He'll get those legs sore, especially the lead up leg, which he's going to lead up on.
Yeah.
And then once he does that, he's going to just come in the second round when he's sore, is just going to gun shy him and then just throw those overhand shots at him, and one of them's going to connect and knock him out.
Yeah, there's a couple things about Greg Hardy. To your point about him being on the main card and what to do with him next, if he loses this fight, I think you move him to the prelims, honestly. But I think he's on the main card, number one, because he's a polarizing name in the sport right now. One, because he was a former NFL player, but two, a lot of people tune in to see his fights because they want to see him not get knocked out because of his past. We don't need to dive into that. That's not this type of podcast, but he does have a pass. You can Google it and you can find out that if you haven't known that. But I think a lot of people, it's kind of like watching Floyd Mayweather, right? You watch to see him either knock somebody out or to hopefully get knocked out. Yeah. And it usually doesn't happen that way. But I think that's what happens with Greg Hardy. To his fighter IQ and his progression, it's been great. He gets better with every single fight. He's got a good training camp. But the thing about Greg Hardy, besides his gas tank that you touched on, was that he has a hard time cutting weight. His last fight with Volkov, I think it was Volkov, or maybe a fight before that, he barely made 265 and a half, which is crazy. He's a big dude. We know that from football. So he carries a lot of weight with him, but you're coming in depleted all the way last second. I think he's usually the last guy to weigh in. So you're coming in super depleted, and you're going up against somebody in Tuivasa who has been training with heavyweights his entire life, who, albeit he only has like five more fights than Greg Hardy, but he's been training with Mark Hunt, you know, since he started fighting.
And he's younger than Greg Hardy.
Exactly. And he's been working harder in this game, right? His training partners have been helping him progress, as has Greg Hardy. I think he was working with Dean Thomas for a while at ATT. I think Dean Thomas does his own thing now, but I've always been a big fan of Tuivasa since hearing Mark Hunt talk about him in podcasts and stuff like that. And I like his friendship with Tyson Pedro, who we haven't seen in 35 years in UFC, but I'm always rooting for Bam Bam every time he's in the cage.
And just everybody knows him because he was a top 10 talent.
Yeah.
And then he added the leg kicks because he lost three times. Yeah. So that's like, you might think of that as like a minor thing, but I think of that as a major thing to add because it's not just him striking. Now you got to worry about him throwing the leg kicks, even though the fight lasted maybe like 30 seconds against Hunsinger or however you say his name is. But the first thing Andy did was he threw a couple leg kicks.
Yeah.
And then he bum rushed him for the knockout because he was able to get a nice leg kick in it. And it stung Hunsinger's leg.
Yeah,
and then he came in for it. It's a nice combination that he can use now. You throw the leg calf kick, try and stun him, and then go for the strike.
Yeah,
instead of just running in there and going for the strike or the takedown. Like, he has several things to use now on his repertoire, and it's showing with his win streak right now.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Derek Lewis, right?
Yeah.
Nobody really took Derek Lewis serious as mixed martial artist. He was just that guy who would knock people out, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with Tuivasa. They thought he was just a taller Mark Hunt. But Derek Lewis went and incorporated takedown defense. He went and got a nutritionist. He's working leg kicks. It's the same thing with Tuivasa. He's training in Australia. He's training in Abu Dhabi. I think he's doing stuff at AKA. So he's really just becoming a student of the game and realizing that you only get a few chances and a few shots in the promotion. He already blew one. He doesn't want to do it again. So, and plus he drinks out of a shoe. Like, so he's an entertaining dude just to be around, right? So I think he gets the win. I don't think this is going to be an easy fight, but I think this is going to be a good fight.
Me too. And I just won the win because then I can have him go into a top 15 fight and knock out Sergey Spivak because I don't want him in that top 15. So
or Walt Harris. We know how or you Walt Harris. Walt.
Just have him knock out both and then send me out with a smile because that right now, like, having to see those guys in the top 15, it's just bad for business.
No, man. They're going to come for you. They're not going to buy a Cage My IQ shirt.
That is fine because when they lose, I won't have to worry about it.
That's right.
Yeah, but let's move on to the co-main event of the evening, one of my most anticipated fights. I'm actually looking forward to this a little bit more than other people are, but we got a welterweight matchup, which is putting up Gilbert Burns, who is right here 19-4 and is the +135 underdog going up against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who is 16-4-1. And is the -160 favorite. What do you see with this matchup?
A lot of confliction on my part, honestly. I think that this is a great matchup of two completely different fighters with different disciplines. With Burns, I see him moving forward, looking to keep the fight moving forward and looking to take the fight to the mat if the opportunity arrives. I also think that he's going to try and catch Wonderboy's kicks to help get the takedown. We know Burns has been very, very striking heavy and focused, which has worked for his career with his fight against Woodley and his fight against Damian Maya, but it has been to his detriment in his fight against Kamaru Usman. He should have incorporated some more takedowns. With Wonderboy, he has a great knack for keeping distance while scoring points to get the decision. And every time that he's poised to lose, he keeps winning. He uses an array of kicks to keep his opponent at distance and has great striking defense only being knocked out once. This was a tough fight to pick for me. And at times I felt that, you know, this, and I know the comment section is going to be angry with this. I felt that Burns's rise to the top has come on the behalf of an old and declining division. I realize that that's stupid. And, you know, I don't want to take away his talents, but a win over Damian Maia, who's in his 40s, a win over a declining Tyron Woodley, like, and, you know, a declining Gunnar Nelson. These are all wins that aren't, again, like, to his detriment. He was just given these opportunities, but that division was declining at the time. And he's fighting a 38-year-old Wonderboy Thompson, who seems pretty ageless, but it's another older person. So at first, when we were talking before we went on, I was picking Gilbert Burns by a third round TKO. I'm super conflicted at this point because of an article I read where Gilbert Burns said he wanted to fight Wonderboy in the streets. He doesn't like him. He can't wait to fight this guy. And going in emotionally to a fight could really cause some hiccups and could cause you to throw your whole game plan out the window. So mid-episode, I switched it. And I'm going Wonderboy by decision.
I did my job. Yeah,
you swayed me, man.
This one wasn't too hard for me. I love both guys as fighters, but like this was too easy for me. But getting started with this one, we got Gilbert Burns. He's known for his dedicated Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He has improved his striking in which he likes to throw the overhand right, which is usually set up by his jab. The jab has been his bread and butter in the stand-up game. He tends to telegraph too much what he's about to do with certain reads, but he is really durable. He likes to throw hooks close to in the clinch and throws a low calf kick to slow the opponent's pace down during the fight. Burns likes to use a double to get takedowns and focuses on keeping control on the ground rather than attacking right away, which is a smart move to do. His IQ is high, but his chin isn't as durable, and he has a wide range of submissions at his disposal. I haven't seen him use those submissions in the past couple of fights. Yeah. I'm hoping to see that, because if he actually tries to focus more on his jiu-jitsu than he does with his striking, he's going to have a better time in the octagon this Saturday than people think he does. But then you got Wonderboy Thompson. He has karate background, and he loves to stand in that stance during the fight. It helps him avoid a lot of shots, and that's why he has one of the best striking defenses in the game. He's well known for his kickboxing and has a smart fighting IQ. He likes to throw a lot of feints to gauge what his opponents are going to do, and then he reacts off of that. His distance control is top-notch. He is known for using sidekicks when guys try to get in close and go for a takedown. He likes to throw right hooks and straight left strikes and always is off the line so his opponents can't guess what he's going to do or where he's at. He has great chin and elite takedown defense, as I said before, and then he isn't as durable now as he was, and his knees aren't 100% like they were before. Mm-hmm. But he's been able to focus on different ways to mask those in his fights to win them. And at the end of the day, I feel like one of the things that have been important for him, and people don't know that per se, is that I believe his brother married Chris Weidman's sister.
Yeah, Weidman's his brother-in-law.
Yeah. Ever since then, him and Chris Weidman have become close.
Yeah.
And in fact, Chris Weidman has moved down from New York all the way to South Carolina where the Thompsons live. And they train together. They go out together. They do a lot together. And he's picked up a few moves and a few ideas from Chris Weidman. And he's added them into his repertoire, and he's been looking better with that. I think that one of those kicks that he does, he got from Weidman, and just the distance management.
Yeah, takedown defense too. Weidman's exactly. A great wrestler. But to that point, I don't want to forget it. I'm sorry to cut you off. But he probably hasn't trained with Weidman after Weidman broke his leg, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big feather in Gilbert's cap, because maybe that's his number one training partner. And now it's like, oh, you know, what do I do? That was my wrestling heavy guy. Like, he would help me with takedown defenses, because Gilbert is world-class with takedowns. So it, you know, I'm not changing my mind again, but like, that's something that as you were talking, I was like, oh crap, that's a real possibility that Well, it's definitely a possibility that they're not training together.
And then one guy that Gilbert Burns has brought in has been Raymond Daniels. He's brought him in. He's been working with him. But that's to me, that's a little bit puzzling, because wouldn't you bring a guy big on karate and then have him work with you with karate? Whereas when you're watching the UFC countdown, me and the guys from MMA were talking about it, and Brandon made a good point with that you bring him in and then he's working with striking with you, where he should be working with kicks, where the kicks are going to come from, and distance management and how to get inside the distance. And they weren't doing that when they were showing it. So that it's kind of puzzling to me. And the reason I'm going with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson by a decision is I feel like he's going to be able to keep the distance. As you know, Gilbert Burns says he's fallen in love with the striking. Ever since he moved up to welterweight, he's been working. He was working with Usman. Now he's working with Michael Chandler on an everyday basis. And he works on using his striking and knocking guys out, and then the kicks. And he doesn't focus too much on the Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where that would be a big plus for him in this fight. And I feel like he's going to go away from it, and it's going to be a detriment, because all Stephen Thompson's going to do now is stay in that karate stance, stay away, and kind of just hit him here and there. He's going to throw a lot of kicks because of the kickboxing background, and then he's just going to move away, use the takedown defense, and then rack up the volume. And then that's how he's going to win. He's going to try. And then just like I said, the striking defense is big. He's going to evade a lot of that stuff. And he's not going to have to move around too much to do that. So I think he's just going to do enough to win each round. And then he's going to pick up that victory, because all he's going to have to do is avoid those shots, big shots.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. Two things. The Raymond Daniels thing, maybe they brought him in because he's such an unusual striker.
Yeah.
And some of those punches that we've seen him use and some of those like kicks that we've seen him use are similar to. Those shots are similar to the way the kicks are going to be coming in from Wonderboy. The second part with Burns, if he wants to win this fight, I think he just needs to bully him. Bite down, move forward, like I talked about with Irene Aldana, and like I talked about with Greg Hardy's fighting style. Move forward, get Wonderboy's back heel to the cage, where that karate stance, you can't use your length there. All he's going to do is do teep kicks to kind of keep him at bay. But if you get Wonderboy in a cage, you can go to work there, dirty box, get him in the clinch, and then you can shoot for the takedown. Wonderboy isn't going to be able to use those karate kicks to get out of the way, but we've seen Tyron Woodley try to do that in their two fights, where he got into the corner and Wonderboy, like for a while, would kind of just like run away and just move the perimeter of the cage. So I wonder if this is going to be kind of a replica of the first Woodley and Wonderboy fight.
In which one of those I felt like Stephen Thompson won, but Stephen Thompson's weakness has always been counter strikers, which that's what Tyron Woodley is good for. And Gilbert Burns isn't that. He comes right at you and attacks you. And I think that's he's going to use that to his advantage and attack Gilbert Burns' aggressiveness and use that to move to the side, avoid him, hit him with kicks, move back, then use the distance. And I think it's going to be a perfect fight for him to get that win. And then it puts him right into that top three, because right now he's at 4 or 5 now, looking to get that title shot. And then if he gets this win, there's only going to be a couple of guys in front of him. You got Leon Edwards and then Colby Covington. So it's like he would be the only guy in that top five that hasn't fought Usman yet. Yeah. And that would be a good first word for him to put out with when he wants the title shot, as in these guys have fought him already and lost.
Yeah.
I haven't. It'll be a perfect way to kind of make that last ditch shot at the title because of his age. Yeah. At 38 years old. And that's why I feel like this just sets things perfectly for Stephen Thompson.
Yeah, I think winner of this fight gets Edwards.
I think could, but there's been rumblings about Edwards fighting somebody.
Masvidal.
Yeah, him or then Masvidal. He's been talking shit with other people, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But with this fight, I got of course I got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson by unanimous decision.
Yeah, you swayed me to that side too, so we'll see.
But now we're here at the main event of the evening, the big fight trilogy. As everybody knows, we got a lightweight matchup here between Dustin Diamond Poirier, who comes in 22-6 and -125 favorite, going up against Conor, the Notorious McGregor, 22-5 and is the +105 underdog. How do you feel about this matchup?
I don't like this matchup because I'm a homer. I'm a Conor fan. So yeah. This is a homer pick. I'll preface this. But I think win, lose, or draw, any Conor McGregor fight is great to watch. And this one will be the same. We know we know this matchup well. We've seen it twice. This is a matchup and a fight of so many questions. How will Conor bounce back from his last fight? Will Conor come in and check kicks? Will Dustin keep the same game plan or try to outbox Conor? Or will Conor keep the same game plan and think that he can get an early knockout like he did with Aldo and Alvarez? I expect Dustin to chop at the legs and work him to the corner and look for the knockout like he did last time. I think Conor is coming in with a new game plan and will be conscious of the kicks and takedowns. All around, I believe Dustin is the better fighter at this point of their career. But Conor has this knack and this ability and has been able to bounce back from adversity and get the win. We saw it with the Diaz first fight. He loses, comes back, and he beats Diaz. With this fight, I'm pulling for McGregor for a first round knockout, TKO. But I wouldn't be shocked if we get the exact same result as last time. And if Conor loses, I don't think this is the last time we see him in the UFC. I think he gets one more fight. And I think that fight is going to be another trilogy with Nate Diaz, both two guys who are kind of at the point in their career where they're regressing. And they may not be title contenders, but they are big pay-per-view draws. Maybe that's the next fight. Conor ends the year against Nate Diaz if he loses this fight. If he wins this fight, whoever wins this fight gets a shot at Oliveira, I believe.
Oh, no. Yeah, that sounds like something that could happen. I just don't know if it will occur, because let's get started with my notes for this main event. First, we got Conor McGregor. He's a southpaw who has been utilizing a lot of boxing in the past couple of years. He has fluid hands and is a sniper with a straight right hand. Very good at controlling distance and using his legs. He tends to overextend his strikes at times and doesn't check leg kicks.
Nope.
Has bad body language when he gets hurt. He kind of telegraphs that he's already hurt, so people know when to keep attacking him. He doesn't have a very good poker face.
No.
He has great get-ups from takedowns, and straight left is his big-time punch. He needs to get back to being more versatile with using more kicks and takedowns and fighting in karate stance. I feel like ever since that Floyd Mayweather boxing fight, he's ditched the old school mentality of the karate stance, the kicks, and all that, like I just said, for falling in love with the boxing part of things, because he got so much money from that exhibition against Floyd Mayweather. He likes to get his opponent off of his game plan by talking trash and getting in their heads before fights. That's exactly how he won the first fight with Dustin Poirier. He got into his head at the weigh-ins, and he got him pissed off and talked trash to him, and Dustin Poirier bit on it, and then he wound up going out of his game plan, and that's how he got knocked out. But then you got Dustin Poirier. He's a southpaw who likes to use boxing and has clean hands. He tends to leave his lead hand low and fights to utilize his jabs a lot, so he's open for damage. He added a low calf kick into his fight game last fight at the discretion of his coach, Matt Brown, and that's one of the things that led to him winning against Conor McGregor. And fight two was the calf kicks.
That was huge.
Big time. He likes to sit down on his punches. He has power in both his hand, and he has a good double to get his opponents down to the ground. He has great durability and gas tank, while his fight IQ is very underrated in the octagon. No one talks about it because he gets into a lot of wars, kind of like last year against Deon Till. With that one, he got into a war where both guys just brawled and went at it. It was one of my favorite fights.
Dan Hooker.
Yeah. Oh, Dan Hooker.
You said Darren Till. I was like, I want to see that fight too.
No, I would. No, I always get those guys mixed up for no reason at all. But Dan Hooker, that fight was amazing. They were just like, they just went at it for five rounds of just complete mayhem. And he that's what Poirier is. He's a warrior. He puts it all out there, and then he'll take in shots so he could give out shots. And sometimes it's his detriment, like in the not with the Habib fight. He took in a lot from there. And then you saw how much even more of a warrior he is with Max Holloway with that fight. He just let all out because he wanted that title, the interim title, and he was able to get it. And no one's put up damage on Max Holloway like that ever, except for him. Even the Volkanovski fights, like those were so close, but Volkanovski wasn't beating him up. He was just getting just enough just doing enough. Dustin Poirier just completely manhandled and beat the shit out of Max Holloway. And I think that's what motivated Max Holloway to change his game up from there on out. And that's why you see this new Max Holloway now. It's because he had that brung out of him from Dustin Poirier in that loss. And
you bring up Max Holloway, right?
Yeah.
He's hurt, right? We know this. What if, like, him and Connor go at it again at 155. Like, Max Holloway said he's the best boxer in MMA.
Yeah.
Right? Connor McGregor fought the best boxer of our time.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be a great matchup? Two guys who aren't going to shoot for takedowns?
It would be, but I don't see Max Holloway moving up yet.
I mean,
even at this point, because I feel like he wants that title.
Yeah.
At his division. And right now, like, he was supposed to fight Rodriguez, and that he got hurt, so that got put on the back burner. But I still think that they're gonna wind up doing it later on now, and then he's gonna win that. I'll put that out there right now.
Yeah, they
can book that. Whoever gets booked next against him, he's gonna win it, and then he's gonna fight the winner of Volkanovski and Ortega.
So he's gonna fight Ortega. It'll be another rematch. I think Ortega wins that matchup. To be honest with you.
That'd be a tough matchup. I don't know, but
I think Holloway won the last fight against Volkanovski. But honestly, if you're motivated, right? Motivated Max, motivated Connor, right? That's at least $1 million payday for Max Holloway, who's probably fighting for, like, I don't know, $120,000-$300,000.
Yeah,
and against Jair, I mean, I would take that $1 million pay grade, go up there and cement your legacy as one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time.
Exactly. But I know we've been veering off a little bit from this topic, but to drive right into my point here is I feel like Conor McGregor is not the same guy that he was when he was hungry. And then when he was winning, he's changed his style up way too much to be more of a one-dimensional fighter. And that's why I'm leaning with Dustin Poirier by second round knockout here, because I feel like you're going to have Conor McGregor come in with the boxing again. He might even do the same thing as last fight. He might win the first round. He might put in a lot and even do damage to Poirier, but then Poirier's just going to do the same thing back. He's just going to throw those leg kicks, because I don't know if Conor McGregor can check them that fast. It's only been like five or six months. Yeah. I know there was talks, like we said before, that Brendan Lomain might have come in to help him train a little bit. And he knows how to check leg kicks. So if he was able to bring him into Abu Dhabi, maybe that might help a little bit.
Remember, you asked Brandon if he, in a shout out to you, PFL interview there, you asked him if he trained with Conor McGregor. He said, no, it never worked.
No, he said he was supposed to, but then he had this fight, and then he's hoping to have a chance to after it. And then he's had a whole month and a half.
Brandon?
Yeah, I have far Brendan.
He's been in California and Vegas the entire time since leaving the wonderful state that we reside in, New Jersey. He hasn't gone to Dublin. He hasn't gone to Abu Dhabi. He's been stateside, because if he goes somewhere and then he catches COVID, you know, his fight against whoever he's fighting in PFL in Miami is off, and he's the number one person. So it's just one of those things.
Exactly. So if he hasn't worked with them, like you said, he hasn't been, then more than likely he hasn't really worked on those leg checks unless he's been able to bring somebody in just for that. And I just feel like at the end of the day, when you're not checking those leg kicks and the guy's just throwing them at you and you're not knocking him out like you expect McGregor to, he's going to take a lot of damage with those, and then it's just going to slow him down. And he's already at that point in his career where his gas tank's not at tip-top shape anymore. It's by at like halfway. So you just keep chipping away at him, and then it just winds up being he slows down. And then Poirier is basically, you could say he's in his prime right now, prime Diamond Poirier style. And then he's just going to come right at him. And if he's already slowed down, he's not going to be able to defend against it. And that's why I have a second round knockout for Poirier. And then where I see this go on from there for both fighters is I see Dustin Poirier automatically going for the title because he was given that shot. And then he chose to go this route first.
Likewise.
And Dana White had already said after this fight, if as long as he wins this, he's getting the title shot no matter what, because he was given it beforehand and then he chose to do this because he wanted to make the big money grab one last time. And then for McGregor, I said this before, like everybody's saying Nate Diaz, but I'd see Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz before I'd see this. I could see that happening first.
What about Nick Diaz at 170?
Nick Diaz is now booked with Robbie Lawler now September for not a date, but for a co-main event spot.
Okay.
So he's going to be booked. So it's like there's not – it's going to be slim pickings. So unless they were to make that Nate Diaz trilogy happen, which I think is highly unlikely because of where Nate Diaz is going to look, that I could see him retiring because he doesn't need this anymore. He doesn't have the – desire and that itch anymore because he's already rich. I think the big thing with him and his rise was the fact that he was broke. He comes in and then he's just beating people because he's training in Ireland. He's training with the people that gave him that desire, gave him that urge. Yeah. And then he fought the karate stance. It was just the way he fought. And then ever since, like I said before, the Mayweather fight, he hasn't fought the same way. He's had his hand in too many businesses where his mind's not solely just on MMA. It's on businesses now. It's on UFC. It's on proper number 12. It's on being in Vegas, just being the face of this, being the face of that.
Yeah.
And it's just pulling him in all different directions. Whereas Dustin Poirier is training and then he has the hot sauce. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and a good fight. Don't forget about that. Yeah, that's great. Exactly. It's different going to training camp or going into training on a bus than it is going in a Bentley. And McGregor, who was somebody who was on essentially our form of food stamps, going to fight for a living.
Yeah.
Hungry McGregor, right? It's versus McGregor, who's rolling up in a Rolls Royce or a Phantom or a Ghost or, you know, whatever he wants to. He's just rolling up there in a Bentley and in a yacht into Abu Dhabi, right? The motivation might not be there. He's having more kids, so maybe, you know, set them up for the rest of their life. But I'm not surprised you went with Dustin. Again, my pick was a homer pick because I really enjoy Conor McGregor's fights. I like him. So, I saw his gym in Ireland and it was a lot of fun. So I'm going to go with him.
Yep. But before we wrap things up with the sponsors, which Jim will gladly get started with the first one, I was able to build a main event parlay on the Brew Party. Shout out to Mr. Hopper, who was gracious enough to allow me on his show the other day, which is now on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and look up The Brew Party and subscribe to his channel. But here's my main card parlay for UFC 264. I got O'Malley by KO round one plus 130. I got Aldana moneyline minus 120. I got Tuivasa moneyline minus 139. And then I got Thompson by decision plus 150. And then to round it out, I got Dustin Diamond Poirier by KO round two, which is plus 800. So for the whole main card, it'll be a plus 16,278. So if you put $10 on that, you could win approximately $1,600, I believe it is. So definitely bank on that, look on that, see if you like those. But that is what I would go with this Saturday night on UFC 264. Let your friends know, let them know this is what I think, and then give it a try. Hey, just put $1 on it. You never know.
Yeah.
But to transition from that to our sponsors, if you want to get started with the first sponsor, we will wrap things up right now.
Sure, man. Let's just dive into this, man. We know sometimes life hits you with a spinning back fist that leaves you staggered, looking to throw in the towel. Enter High Tide Herbal, a company specializing in CBD products designed for athletes by athletes and coaches. Whether it's a nagging sports injury, old age, or anxiety, we all know, you know, 2020 and 2020, the beginning of 2021 wasn't as great as it was set out to be. High Tide Herbal has you covered. Go to HighTideHerbal.com and enter promo code CageMyIQ10 at checkout. Support the boys at CageMyIQ by supporting High Tide Herbal and get back into the fight.
Thanks for that. Then we got our second sponsor, which is 99 Jersey. All you got to do is use promo code SportsBoxShow20 at checkout to receive 20% off your next purchase. Just go to www.99jersey.com. Look at the wide range of jerseys and shirts that they have for any sports team that you like, or even if you like Space Jam and the Mighty Ducks, they got that covered too. Just go to the website, pick whatever you want, whatever style, and then go to checkout and then put in the promo code SportsBoxShow20 and watch as you get 20% off your next purchase at 99 Jersey. And then lastly, we got Odds Jam. Just go to the link in our bio of this video and watch as you never use a bet again. Go to the link, sign up. Then once you sign up, get started. All you got to do is whenever you make a bet, just go on to your account, look at the different lines that they have on there, pick the best one that fits your use for that said bet, and then watch as once you make it, that you're going to never use a bet again, because Odds Jam does their job in helping you out, and then they make sure that you always win with Odds Jam. So once again, go to the link in bio, in our bio, so you never miss a bet again. And then that will wrap things up to here on Cage My IQ, the UFC 264 Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier trilogy preview. As always, I'm your host, D-Bake. This is my co-host, Jim. And then we are wrapping things up. And then right before we get ready to go, as you know before, just go to fightersfirst.shop. Scroll down to the Cage My EQ collection and check out our new merch that we have out that just started last week. So if you can, support our brand, buy some of our stuff, and then let us know what you think of our episode. Leave us a comment on YouTube or Twitter and just support the show. But yeah, as always, we are out.
See ya.
Yep.